Peter Whimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter. The Five Red Herrings by Dorothy L. Sayers. Adapted in 8 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 5, Alibis. Lord Peter Whimsey is investigating the murder of Sandy Campbell, an unpopular Galloway artist, and suspicion has now fallen on another painter, Matthew Gowan, who has apparently shaved off his beard and escaped to London. Shortly after Inspector Macpherson's departure to track him down, the local police discover that Alcock, Gowan's butler, has also disappeared. Sergeant D.L. informs Lord Peter.
Aye, my lord. The call came in from Kirkcudbright half an hour ago. Alcock and Hammond, the chauffeur, have taken Mr. Gowan's car and vanished. We know not where to.
Has Inspector Macpherson been informed?
Aye, my lord. What I canna understand, though, my lord, is how it is Mr. Gowan and his servants are suspected at all. Just 2 days ago, Inspector Macpherson was ready to swear Hugh Farron was our murderer.
Ah, but a lot's happened since then, Sergeant. To begin with, yesterday afternoon we found several pieces of Gowan's silky black beard at the scene of the crime.
Which scene, my lord? The main road where Campbell was killed, or the burn where we found the body?
The road. The theory is that after committing the murder, Gowan shaved his beard off there and then to avoid being recognised while taking the body back to Gatehouse. Whatever the reason, though, Inspector Macpherson is convinced those tufts of hair let Farron out.
But, my lord, what about Farron's bicycle, what was found abandoned up near the disused lead mines? Surely that suggests he did exactly what he threatened to do. Killed Campbell because he thought he was associating with his wife, and then went up into the hills to do away with himself.
Possibly, D.L., possibly. But then what was the point of all that nonsense up at the Minnock on Tuesday morning? Pretending to be Campbell and painting the picture before toppling him into the burn.
My lord?
Well, you see what I'm driving at, don't you, Sergeant?
Why
should Farron concoct such an elaborate fake alibi if he was intending to kill himself immediately afterwards anyway?
Well, my lord...
Similar considerations apply to Gowan, of course. I mean, in his case, what on earth was the point of bicycling all the way from the Minnock to Girvan to catch the train and then slinking back to Kirkcudbright to go into hiding? We know he was at home until Thursday evening because his maid, Betty, saw him lurking beardless on the upper floor. Oh, it doesn't make sense, D.L. And yet we know there was a traveller from Girvan to Ayr, and we know he had a bicycle which he sent on to Euston, and we strongly suspect he's our man. So who was he? One of our four other suspects? Ferguson, perhaps?
I thought it had been established, my lord, that Ferguson was on his way to Glasgow on Tuesday morning by an entirely different route.
His alibi for Tuesday is pretty good. What about Waters, then?
We still don't know where Waters is. He's completely disappeared.
Henry Strachan, maybe? He came in on Tuesday afternoon with a black eye, which he said he got playing golf, but I know that's a lie.
Could be, my lord.
Or what about Jock Graham? He was seen somewhere near the Minnock on Tuesday morning and won't say where he was on Monday night. Have we got anything further on him?
I'm expecting something hourly, my lord. And have you seen this in the Glasgow Clarion? P.C. Duncan has been blabbing to a reporter. Look at it, look at it. The police have reason to suppose that the crime was committed by an artist. The one fact we were wishful to conceal from the suspects. Mr. Jock Graham interviewed by our correspondent. Oh, my lord, Graham knows he's suspected now, and I've no doubt he'll be producing an alibi before the day's out, either for Monday night or for Tuesday morning, or even both.
Yes, Sergeant, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Oh, well, never mind. You stay here and wait for Graham's alibi. I shall drive out to the Carrick Shore, where I know Strachan is painting this morning, and talk to him about his. Cheerio.
Hello, Whimsy. How on earth did you get here?
I drove here. Fresh air and all that kind of thing, what? Well, I hope you don't mind me washing your paint.
Well, frankly, I...
So glad. I say, that's rather nice. How long have you been doing that?
About an hour.
You use very big brushes. Broad, sweeping style and all that, what?
But I wonder you don't use a sketching box on days like this.
Yes, I don't know why I don't, except that I never have done. Not used to it. One gets into habits.
Yes, I suppose one does.
I'm rather methodical, really. I could lay my hands on any of my paints in the dark.
Yes, interesting. Do you have a tidy mind as well? Hmm? Well, I mean, are you good at dates and figures, timetables, all that sort of thing?
Not the least. My tidiness begins and ends with my painting. I'm hopelessly unobservant. I haven't even got a good visual memory. I'm always seeing things I hadn't noticed before. Which is quite pleasant. I get the fun of having perpetual surprises.
Yes. You're safeguarded against boredom, huh? Sometimes an eye for detail is a good thing, you know. I mean, if you want to tell a good, plausible, circumstantial lie, for example.
Oh? Yes. Yes, I suppose it would be, under those circumstances.
Your little story of that rogue golf ball that gave you that china, for instance. How much better it would have been if surrounded and supported by stout, upstanding, well-thought-out details.
What?
For one thing, you omitted to mention what hole you were playing when it happened. There never was a man telling a golfing story who didn't buttress it about with every kind of geographical and historical detail. That was poor psychology on your part. I mean, sir...
Now, look here. What the devil do you mean by talking to me like this?
I'm just wondering whether you care to suggest any other explanation for that black eye of yours. If you were out on the tiles, or, well...
If you take that tone to me, I'll break your neck. Damn you, yeah, whimsy.
Look, you're cracking, for heaven's sake, man. Pull yourself together. It is dangerous to be violent. Listen, Strachan. Listen, man. I'm a smaller man than you are, but I could chuck you into eternity with a turn of the wrist. Now, stand still. Stand still. Don't you ever think 2 minutes ahead? Do you really suppose you can settle everything by brute force in this blundering way? Suppose you had knocked me down and I'd split my head open like Campbell. What would you have done with the body, Strachan?
My God, Whimsy, you deadly devil. I meant to kill you then. I've got such a hell of a temper. What made you do that?
I wanted to see what sort of a temper you'd got. And do you know, I almost wished I'd let you knock me down, just to see what you'd do. Well, never mind, it's starting to rain. I think we'd better pack up and go home.
Yes. Hello.
What's up?
The cobalt's not here. Must have rolled off.
Hmm. Yeah, here it is. Ah. In the heather. Is that the lot?
That's the lot.
Well, I better make tracks then.
Look, Whimsy, what are you going to do?
Go home. Unless there's anything you want to tell me.
I'll tell you this. One of these days you'll go too far and somebody will murder you.
I shouldn't be in the least surprised.
No, Mrs. Smith LeMessurier, what can I be doing for you?
Oh, Sergeant, it's this report in the Glasgow Clarion. I just wanted to ask whether there's any foundation for the dreadful insinuations in it.
That's as may be.
You see, it says that the murder must have been committed by an artist. What makes them say that?
Well, I'll no be saying that there mightn't be some evidence to point in that direction, especially since the deceased was an artist himself, and most of his friends were artists.
Oh, of course. And then it goes on to mention Mr. Graham.
Aye, it does so.
Oh, surely it can't be that you actually suspect Mr. Graham of this dreadful thing.
Oh, well, now, there's always some grounds for suspicion when a crime is committed and a person will not state just where he was at the time. Oh. I wouldn't say that there was what they call a violent presumption of guilt, but there's grounds for what we may call a general suspicion.
Oh, I see. Well, tell me, officer, supposing anybody were to clear your mind of this general suspicion against Mr. Graham, it wouldn't be necessary to make the explanation public?
Well, that depends on the nature of the explanation. If it was such as to remove a possibility of this gentleman's being concerned, and if it was well supported by proofs, and provided that the matter never came to trial, there would be no need to make anything public at all.
Well, in that case... Oh, Mr. Deal, I can rely on your discretion, can't I?
For by... I'm a married man. Just tell me all about it. As if I might be your father.
Oh, I will. Thank you, I will. Mr. Graham would never say anything, of course. He's too kind and too chivalrous. Mr. Dalziel, he couldn't tell you where he was on Monday night because he was with me.
Is that so? Yeah, that's a very good reason for him to keep silence, a very satisfactory reason indeed. Can you tell me, Mrs. Smith-Lemessurier, at what time Mr. Graham came to your house and left you again?
Oh, he came to dinner at about 8 o'clock and left me again after breakfast. That would be a little after nine. My maid can confirm the times.
Well, I'm sure she can. And Mr. Graham was in the house all the time?
He was never out of my sight.
I see. What makes you think, ma'am, that this story provides Mr. Graham with an alibi for the murder of Campbell that was found with his head dunted in at 2 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon?
What? But I thought...
What makes you think the gentleman needs an alibi for the Monday night?
Guilty knowledge, you think, D.L.?
It looks very like it, my lord. The fact that Campbell was murdered on Monday night hasn't been publicly announced. So, how did she know?
How, indeed?
And now here's another piece of intelligence come in from Kirkcudbright. Mm-hmm. Yon servants of Mr. Gowan, Alcock and Hammond, have been found in Brig of Dee.
What on earth were they doing there?
Taking a fishing holiday. And they had a letter from Mr. Gowan written in London giving them permission to use the car. Apparently the letter was posted in Piccadilly on Wednesday evening, my lord.
But Gowan didn't go to London until Thursday night. Bunter saw him being smuggled out of the house in his car.
Aye, but Alcock claims the muffled-up person was none other than himself. He also rejects completely the story told by the maid, Betty. Mr. Gowan could not have been seen by her on the top floor of the house on Wednesday, apparently, because he went to London on Monday evening, as originally stated.
Which gives him a watertight alibi, too. Perfect, D.L., perfect. Do you know, I'm beginning to enjoy this. The more alibis, the merrier, what? And the more unconvincing, the better. Come along now, any other customers?
Aye, my lord. Mm-hmm. Ferguson, we've had confirmation of the time he arrived in Glasgow on Tuesday.
Ah, yes. He took his broken magneto into Sparks and Crisp the moment he arrived, didn't he?
Aye, my lord. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Saunders dealt with him. He couldn't charge his memory with a precise minute, but he thinks it would be about 3:10.
That's just about what Ferguson made it.
Aye. So his alibi is looking very good. There was one other thing, though, Saunders said. He said he couldn't well understand what had happened to Ferguson's magneto. It looked as though someone had been doing it a willful damage.
Really? That's very interesting.
Aye, my lord. And I was thinking maybe that perhaps some felonious body was interested in seeing that Ferguson didn't take out his car that morning.
So was I, Sergeant. So was I.
Newton Stewart Police Station, Sergeant D.L. Aye, very good. What account does he give of himself? Aye. Detain him. I'll be along in the next train. Thank you. Goodbye. That was Glasgow, my lord. Mm-hmm. They've picked up Waters. He claims he's been on a yachting expedition with a friend since early Tuesday morning.
Another alibi. Let's go, Sergeant.
Never knew such a lot of silly fuss about nothing.
I've been yachting with a bloke, that's all. Old Tom Druitt of Trinity, as a matter of fact.
I dare say I am a bit untidy. So'd you be after 5 days in a sou'westerly gale in Tom's dirty little windjamming beast of a boat.
See here now, Mr. Waters. Let's get all this story correct. You say you started out with this man Druitt on his yacht. When did you go aboard, sir?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. Last Monday night, about 11 o'clock, I heard some fool chucking stones at my window. I went down, and there was Druitt. You remember Druitt, Whimsy, or was he before your time?
I never knew any Trinity men. The Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans.
Of course, you were at Balliol. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I let him in and gave him a drink. But I was rather fed up at being rousted out because I meant to go up to Glasgow by the 8:45 next morning and I wanted my beauty sleep. Besides, I felt rather bloody. Now, you remember, Whimsy, I had had that fight with Campbell in the McClellan Arms.
By the way, what is this story about Campbell?
I'll tell you later, old man. Carry on.
Yes. Well, I told Druitt I was going to Glasgow, and he said, why not come with him, if I wasn't in a hurry? It was lovely weather, and his boat, Susanna, he calls it, could make a voyage in 2 or 3 days. Well, it sounded all right. So I said, I'd think about it. But then he said, wouldn't I go with him anyhow and have a look at the Susanna, as he got her lying off the dune? Well, I thought I might as well have a run. It seemed the best way of getting Druitt out of the house. He'd hired a car from somewhere, and we got down there in no time, and after half an hour or so, he dropped me back at the corner, and I walked home. I left it with him that I'd think the trip over, and if I wasn't on board at 9:30, he wasn't to wait any longer, as he'd miss the tide.
But you did go?
Yes. I didn't really intend to, but next morning, when Mrs. McLeod, that's my landlady, called me, the weather looked damn good, so I thought, why not, after all? So I had my breakfast, got on my bike and pushed off.
And you didn't tell Mrs. McLeod where you were going?
No. Mm-hmm. She knew I was going to Glasgow and might be away some days, and it was no concern of hers how I went. As a matter of fact, she was out in the back somewhere. I didn't see her. I bicycled up to the dune, signalled to Druitt, and he took me off.
What did you do with your bicycle?
Well, just shoved it into a little shed place there is up there among the trees. I'd often put it there before when I was painting or bathing off the dune, and it never came to any harm. That was that. As I was saying, we had rather bad luck with the weather, which turned filthy yesterday morning, and we didn't get to Gourock till this morning. And now, do you mind telling me what all this is about?
The story tallies, all right, dear, what?
It tallies well enough. Only for the evidence of this man, Druitt. He'll have to be found at once. Where will he be just now, Mr. Waters?
God knows. Somewhere off Kintyre, I should imagine. Don't you believe what I'm telling you? What is all this mystery anyway? Whimsy, surely you can explain.
Well, you see, it's like this, old horse. Last Tuesday morning, they found Campbell lying dead in the Minnoch with a nasty crack in his head made with a blunt instrument. And as you'd last been seen with your 10 fingers on his throat, threatening to do him in, we rather wondered, you know, what had become of you and all that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, aye, it's all very well, my lord, but Waters could still have done it if Druitt is an accomplice. We didn't ken for sure that he didn't join the Susanna at some other point later in the day, after he'd tumbled Campbell's body into the Minnoch.
We don't know. But in that case, Sergeant, when did he kill Campbell?
On Monday night, my lord. The man at the window wasn't Druitt at all, but Campbell come back to finish off the fight.
Very well. If that man was Campbell, how and when did Waters get into communication with Druitt?
Perhaps he knew beforehand, my lord, that Druitt and the Susanna would be, at Lady Bay, for instance, on Tuesday night. So all he'd have to do would be to bicycle over there.
Oh, it's perfectly possible, Sergeant. Though I think you ought to ask yourself where Waters ate breakfast on Tuesday morning. However, if this alibi is going to stand up, the point that must be proved beyond doubt is that Waters went aboard the Susanna not later than 9:30 on Tuesday. There are cottages down at the dune. Surely, to goodness, somebody must have seen him.
That's a fact.
And the bicycle should be there, too. Look, chase it up, Sergeant. Let's see if we can get alibis for all 6 of our suspects, what?
Oh, that'll no be easy, my lord. You dinna believe Strachan's tale. And as for Farron, well, there's no knowing where he may be.
I wonder. I caught a glimpse of Mrs. Farron this morning, and she looked much more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm wondering if... But I think I'll pay the lady a visit. Well, Mrs. Farron, we shall soon have the truant husband back now.
What makes you think that?
All stations call. Nothing agitating, you know. Anxious friends and relations, all that sort of thing.
That is a very great impertinence.
I admit that you don't seem frightfully anxious. Where did the letter come from?
What letter?
The letter your husband wrote to you yesterday.
If the police have been tampering with my correspondence...
Well, since you admit to the existence of the letter...
Oh, I admit nothing of the sort.
Oh, come now, Mrs. Farron, you're not one of nature's gifted liars. Up to yesterday, you were genuinely frightened and anxious about your husband's safety. Today, you are not. Therefore, you received the letter. Why deny it?
Why should I tell you anything about it?
Why, indeed. But surely, Mrs. Farron, you must know that your husband is, or maybe, a valuable witness in the Campbell case.
Why?
Well, he left here on Monday evening looking for Campbell. He was last heard of inquiring for Campbell in Gatehouse. It would be interesting to know if he actually met Campbell, wouldn't it?
Lord Peter Wimsey, have you ever thought how contemptible you are? Do you dare to suggest that I believe my husband to be guilty of murder?
If I must answer that, then I think you have thought so, and I'm not sure that you don't think so now.
You're quite mistaken. I'm sure my husband is innocent. There's another reason for...
Ah, stupid of me. It's your pride that you're sheltering now, ain't it? My dear Mrs. Farron, will you believe me when I say that all men, the best and worst alike, have these moments of rebellion and distaste? It's nothing. It's a case for understanding and, if I may say so, response.
I shall not do anything. To be insulted was enough to be deserted as well. Is it my fault that just because this house was always a peaceful and beautiful place, that unhappy man should have come to tell me his troubles? Do you believe there was anything more than sympathy in my feelings for Sandy Campbell?
Not for a moment.
Then why couldn't my husband believe it?
Because he's in love with you.
That is not the kind of love I recognize as love. If he loved me, he should have trusted me.
As a matter of fact, I quite agree with you. But everybody has his own ideas about love, and Hugh Farron is a decent man.
Is it decent to believe vile things of other people?
Perhaps not. Besides, he should have known that under no circumstances would you ever be unfaithful to him. For one thing, you haven't got the temperament. For another, you would never like to think less of yourself than you do. For a third, it would offend your aesthetic taste. And for a fourth, it would give other people a handle against you.
Upon my word, your reasons are more insulting than my husband's suspicions.
You're quite right, they are.
Go and see him. Tell him what you've been saying to me, if you dare, and see what he says to you.
With pleasure. If you'll give me his address.
I don't know it, but the postmark was Brough in Westmoreland.
Thank you, Mrs. Farron. I'll go and find him.
Hello, Farron. Don't let me disturb the painting. I'd like to watch.
My God! Wimsey, by all that's holy! How did you get here? Oh, don't say my wife sent you.
Not exactly, but I'd be damn glad if you'd tell me exactly what you've been up to since Monday night. The police have been hunting for you everywhere.
The police? Why in the world?
Well, the fact that you were talking rather wildly about suicide, and then your bicycle being found close to those old mines, and then Campbell's murder, of course.
Murder? Campbell's been murdered?
He was bumped off sometime on Monday night or Tuesday morning up at the Minnoch.
Was he? Served the bigger right. Oh, by the way, I seem to see something behind this. Am I supposed to have done it, Wimsey?
I don't know. But there's a feeling that perhaps you ought to come forward and say something. You were looking for him, you know, on Monday night.
Yes, I was. And if I'd met him, there would have been murder done. But as a matter of fact, I didn't meet him.
You can prove that?
Well, I don't know that I can if it comes to that. Well, this isn't serious, is it?
Again, I don't know. Let's have the story, Farron.
I see. Well, I came home about 6 o'clock on Monday, and I found out Blighter flirting with my wife. I was fed up, Wimsey. I hoofed him out. And I dare say I made a bit of an ass of myself with Gilda afterwards. I said a lot of silly things I didn't mean and so forth.
I can imagine. And then, finally, you stormed out, threatening murder and suicide, and went off to get drunk.
Well, that's right. Well, after I'd had one or two in turn, I barged off to Gatehouse to find Campbell. Somebody told me they'd seen Campbell go out to Cree Town, so I went after him.
No, you didn't. You went up the road to the golf links.
Oh, did I? Oh, yes, so I did. Well, I went to find Strachan, but he was out. I left a note or a message for him, I think. To tell the truth, I'm not very clear about it. but I think I told him I was going to Creetown to do Campbell in and to cut my own throat. Some rot or other. Oh, I see, poor old Strachan. He must have thought I'd murdered Campbell. Did he show that note to the police?
Not that I know of.
No, I suppose he wouldn't. Strachan's a good sort. Well, I went over to Creetown and managed to raise a bottle of whiskey after closing time, and, well, I'm a bit vague about the next part of it. But I know I remember going up to the hills with some vague idea of chucking myself down one of the pits. I wandered round and then sat down and moralised a bit, with the help of the whiskey. I must have been down drunk. Well, then, presently, I heard somebody shouting, and I shouted back. And shortly afterwards, old Strachan appeared. He started talking and tried to get hold of me. So I struggled and fought him. It was a lovely fight, I do know that. And I think I gave him a whopping black eye. The next thing I knew, it was quite well on in the next morning, and I was lying in a sort of hollow among the bracken, without so much as a headache. Well, I didn't know where I was, but I didn't care. I just knew I didn't want to go home. I was finished, done. I wanted to go gypsying.
When did you next meet somebody?
Well, I walked and walked until I hit the road near New Bregodie. And from there I got a lift in a lorry to Dumfries. Oh, that must have been about 3 o'clock.
And then you came on here?
Yes. Ah. Bribing a lot of drivers for lifts.
Very jolly. But you know, Farron, it all boils down to this, that you can't produce a single witness to say where you were between Monday night and Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
All this isn't serious, really. I've got a perfectly natural, straightforward explanation, haven't I?
That sounds natural enough to me, perhaps. But whether the police will take that...
Oh, reason? Damn the police! I see, Whimsy. Does this mean I've got to go back?
I'm very much afraid it does. Come on, Farron.
So, DL, there you are. Strachan was protecting Farron, and Farron has now repaid the favour by explaining how Strachan came by his beautiful china. However, the whole story hardly adds up to a decent alibi for either of them.
No, my lord. Oh, 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 it's a difficult case, right enough. Now, there's this business about Waters.
Waters? What about him?
I sent Constable Ross down to the dune. Waters' bicycle is not where he said it was. So, either there's a bicycle thief about, or Waters' alibi has collapsed. And the question I'm asking myself, my lord, is, should I arrest Waters for murder?
In that episode of The Five Red Herrings, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Whimsy, Ian Carmichael, Sergeant D.L., John Graham, Strachan, Gordon Clyde, Mrs. Smith-Lemesura, Sheila Mitchell, Waters, Bill Wallace, Mrs. Farron, Francis Jeter, and Farron, Gordon Gardner. Alibis was adapted by Chris Miller from the book The Five Red Herrings by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.